Hey, chefs.
How's it going, Tom?
Good. So what did you do with the chicken?
We made a brine with orange and actually a little fish sauce.
So we're going more Asian barbecue. Whose idea was that?
Paul.
Okay. So you guys haven't slept at all?
Yeah.
No.
Awesome.
It's not that awesome, I'm not going to lie. I'm so exhausted, and when I get really tired, I say whatever comes to my mind. No, but you're going to love it.
I hope so.
It's going to be like sex in the mouth.
Oh.
Okay.
No, really, you're
not. We put a lot of love.
Cool. All right.
Thank you, Chef.
Thanks, Chef.
Where do you come up with these things, Grayson? It's like sex in the mouth.
Yeah, I know, right? No sleep. That'll do it.
Hey, what's happening? Welcome back. Hope your holiday break was great. It was nice to have a break. Hit the reset button a little bit. Now I'm ready to get at it again. I thought it would be a really good idea to try to finally focus on nose-to-tail eating more this year. So right off the bat, I thought we should discuss the importance of eating nose-to-tail. And how this year I honestly think that it's finally going to catch on as a growing trend. I was given a lot of great cookbooks over the holiday, and I'd like to talk about them. But one of the first that I got came from my friend Mark. It's called Odd Bits, How to Cook the Rest of the Animal by Jennifer McLagan. And the funny thing was, I knew about this book last year. I wanted to have her on the show, but you know, everything that was going on, it never came about. You know, one thing I do want to hit on real quick before we get into anything else is the My Life as a Foodie Facebook group. Joshua is going to New Orleans and decides to post a comment on his own asking, you know, where he should go in New Orleans to eat. You know, what are some good recommendations? And everyone chimed in. I had nothing to do with it. I didn't even take part in the whole thing. And you guys are having this discussion on your own. And I tell you what, it just makes me so happy to see this sense of community. And Joshua even says, hey, fellow lifers. So that's the new nickname. You know, Dan Patrick has the Danettes. Everyone has, you know, this group name. We're called Lifers now. You know, Joshua coined it, and I like it. And I tell you, it just, man, it made me smile when I saw that. And I just love the fact that you guys are taking the reins on this thing, because it is ours. This group is ours. This show is ours. I mean, this show is called My Life as a Foodie, but it really is about your life as a foodie. It's about living a lifestyle. As a person who's just really intense about food, eating, cooking, and food issues. So there really is, this show is more like your life as a foodie. And so I think that I'd like to start to really kind of focus on that, that this is our lifestyle. And I talk about myself, but because, you know, I'm bringing my experiences in, but you guys bring your experiences in there. And again, I can't tell you, this Facebook group is the best. I don't think there's any other podcast out there. Maybe there's a few, but there's any other podcast out there that has this kind of, I mean, I've got the coolest listeners. I mean, everybody who's involved with this show is just absolutely cool. They're nice to each other. You know, no one's shitting on each other. He said he goes to Chow and he seems, man, there's a lot of uppity people in there. And that's true. There is. There's a lot of uppity people everywhere. Gets back to the whole elitist thing that we talked about last year. And does kind of affect us a bit sometimes. So this is great to see. Anyway, getting back to this whole nose-to-tail thing, this book, Odd Bits, that Jennifer wrote, it's kind of like The Whole Beast by Fergus Henderson. Really, that kind of set the trend, and Fergus Henderson is the master of this. This book is prettier, it's detailed, it's got great pictures. It's like I said, it's like, you know, putting The Whole Beast in lipstick and a short skirt. And really, it's kind of like that. It's great pictures, really well-written, explained very well. The Whole Beast is the Bible. There's no denying that. Ryan at Nose to Tail at Home managed to make this as enticing as possible. And I think maybe it's catching on. So I'd like to think that this year will be the year that we start to do more Nose to Tail. The funny thing, too, is that, you know, if you look at this, I mean, people who are really crazy about their animals, they feed their pets on this raw diet where there's like, you know, turkey necks, it's all raw foods and whole foods, pig ears. I mean, look at some of the stuff that they sell in these pet stores for your dog. Roasted pig ears, right? Raw hide, all this stuff, all the parts of the animal that humans won't eat. You know what? I think sometimes these animals are eating better than their owners. And I think that the owners are missing out. I work with this girl. She, you know, she feeds her dog this raw diet. It's fantastic. But then she, like, she eats ravioli out of a can. I'm like, are you serious? Chef Boyardee? And then she's got a stomachache. Well, why? I mean, that's crazy. It's just funny. So, you know, it's great to know that people are really getting into this nose to tail thing. David Chang wrote a piece, either for Esquire or GQ, a few years ago. And he talked about, you know, in the economy, the way things are getting, that sooner or later, nose to tail was going to catch on here because food is going to become more expensive. And these cheap cuts are going to be the most affordable for you. Now, they're no less affordable than a lot of the stuff you buy now because people are starting to eat it. And it's hard to find. You can't walk into a grocery store, ask the butcher behind the counter for pig's feet, because they only carry standard cuts that, you know, common folk eat. People aren't eating this stuff yet. When I first started to go to make bacon, you know, I wanted to find a pork belly. I go to the store. He doesn't carry pork belly. I went to a meat shop. He didn't carry more pork belly. I actually end up at a Mexican market and an Asian market to find pork belly because they eat that stuff. And listen, sometimes it is about money. As I know, this couple, they ate very well quite often. She was an amazing cook. She cooked amazing food. But I knew it was getting expensive for them to eat like this. And sooner or later, it might just start to, you know, hit them a little bit in the pocketbook. So they invite us over for dinner. She's cooking London broil. And she said she had to cut back on the more expensive cuts. And I don't care. I love London broil. And she cooked. It was great. It tasted fantastic because she knows what she's doing. But it was interesting to see her take that turn. Like I said, she's a wonderful cook. She made that thing sing because you can if you're good at this. But that's what it takes. True talent in the kitchen. You have to want to cook. You have to want to take the time to do these things. You know, that's really, it takes some talent to get this done. I mean, there's a difference between a stew of chicken's butthole and really delicious stew of chicken's butthole. Because you have to have your shit together in the kitchen. And you have to buy quality meat whenever possible. I mean, look at this. Charcuterie in France, in Brittany, and other parts of France, all come from really well-raised, delicious pigs. You cannot hide behind sauces or anything else when you're doing charcuterie. It's all about the animal. You've got to start with a good product. And like I said, you have to want to cook this. You have to want to eat it, or you're not going to do any of it right. It might not be for you, and that's okay. But I'm just telling you, this is something that is out there, that is gaining in popularity, and it is very good. It takes patience, takes care, takes the ability to follow a recipe. So in this episode, we're going to be taking on pig's ears. We're going to make a court bouillon, which is kind of a common thing that you'll need to know how to make in order to render a lot of this stuff. Because a lot of it's got a lot of fat, a lot of fibrous tissue that you've got to break down over time, and you've got to do it in a flavorful broth. And court bouillon is very, very, very easy to make. Then we're going to cook the pig ears in the bouillon and then arrange the salad. That's coming later. The day I recorded my last episode of the year last year, Kim Jong-il, this tyrant leader of North Korea, had a heart attack and died. In fact, I think he was dead before I even recorded the show. News spread like a bad case of kimchi breath on Sunday. I mean, this guy, it was crazy. News was rattling. I go, are you going to, this guy's dead? This guy was nuts. This guy was going to kill us all. Sam Dean was a blogger from Bon Appetit. He had a really interesting take on this dude. It turns out Kim Jong-il was a real foodie. And he points out it seems kind of strange that this guy was a foodie considering that North Korea is a nation that basically doesn't have any food. According to The Atlantic a few years ago, because I was reading up on this, there was a book that was written by Kim's personal chef. This dude, Kim Jong-il, refused to eat anything but the best. He wanted the best of the best. He once sent this chef on a trip to Japan specifically to pick up mugwort-filled rice cakes, a pack of every single brand of Japanese cigarettes. He made him fly to Czech Republic for beer, Denmark for pork, Iran and Uzbekistan for caviar, Japan for fish. One time, this guy brought back more than a ton of fresh seafood in the belly of an airplane. And this guy could drink, too. They estimated his liquor cellar had something like 10,000 bottles in it. Steady supply of his favorites, Hennessy, Johnny Walker, you name it. At CNN report 9 years ago, CNN reported that Kim was the world's largest buyer of Hennessy having spent between $650,000 and $720,000 per year on cognac during the 90s. He also wanted to point out that Amnesty International reported that in 2006, 37% of North Korean children were chronically malnourished. Kim Jong-il was a douchebag. He lied about everything, and I mean everything. You remember those stories that came out of the World Cup? I mean, their team was just terrible. And I think that, you know, it just really kind of showed what kind of a character this guy had. They were getting their asses handed to him. And these guys all know, I'm going to defect. I'm not going back. There's no freaking way they'll kill us. So in North Korea, God only knows what happened to these guys. In North Korea, while the game's being played, they're broadcasting their own play-by-play of the game. North Korea be up like 10 goals in the first half. Meanwhile, they're getting pummeled like 8-1. Kim Jong-il once said that he shot 37 under par, including 11 holes in one in a single round, and had witnesses, of course. Dan Patrick had a great line. He said, look, whether that's true or not, now he's 6-under. Awesome. 6-under. Oh, man. Kim Jong-il. De salut. Okay, the beer we're drinking today, because we're going to drink a beer, is an American Black IPA. It's called More Brown Than Black IPA. It's made by The Alchemist, Ninkasi, and Stone. Now, this, it's kind of hard to say what this is. I mean, it's a hoppy. Hold on, I'm going to open it. Yeah. Got a picture. I'm going to take a picture here for the website while I pour. Hold on a second. I have my camera. Hold on a second. Let me do this. Oh, that fat head on it. Yeah, okay. I'm going to try to take more pictures this year. I'm taking pictures of the pig salad. We're not going to make that in the kitchen. I'm not taking you to the kitchen to do this because it's really involved, and I don't want to screw it up. But I'm going to include pictures on the website, so you can check that out. There's a fat head on this thing, man. Maybe I should have been a little more cautious. Look what I did. Look at that. Okay, 7.4 ABV. It's a little strong. It really basically what this is. It's like that Cali Belgique that Stone makes. It's Stone IPA, and they use Belgian yeast. That's it. So it's the same ABV, same everything. Just the flavor is different. This is like, you know, if you were going to take Stone IPA and then make it with some black patent malt or chocolate malt or some roasted barley or just something dark. And, you know, kind of gives it a little chocolatey flavor. Now, this is becoming an emerging style. A lot of people are making black IPAs. And I thought that, and I wasn't alone, I thought that Stone, when they did their 12th anniversary, it was a black IPA. And that became Stone Sublimely Self-Righteous IPA. I thought that was the first of the style, but it wasn't. In fact, Mitch Steele said himself that he was kind of an homage that to this Vermont pub and brewery in 1994. They were the first ones to make one. And the head's kind of died down. Well, let's smell it. Oh, yeah, there's that. Good Lord. It's like a pine cone. Pine, citrus, you know the drill. And these Stone hops, it's crazy. Now, we'll taste. A little spicy. It tastes like it smells. Piney, citrusy. That's nice. Hey, you know what? It's not heavy at all. It finishes nice and round. Goes down slick. Good beer. Black IPAs. Now, I didn't really warm up to it, but I am now. This guy from Jamie Floyd is from Nantsiki Brewing Company. I guess they brewed this in November of last year. It said, brewers are the kind of people who spend 55 hours a week working in the brewery, sit on nonprofit boards, coach their kids' soccer team, and still spend their weekends working at beer festivals that raise money for charities. That's awesome. Well, this is interesting. I love this. Mitch and Greg asked me to collaborate with them and John to raise some money to assist in rebuilding the region where The Alchemist was devastated by Hurricane Irene. I was stoked, brewing with friends, old and new, helping a fellow brewer raise money, and with pints in hand all the while. Awesome. So remember, when drinking this tasty beverage, you're helping others too. We salute you. Yeah, so yeah, a lot of this, I guess, proceeds of this beer go to rebuilding The Alchemist. Well, so that's the beer. And I'm going to be sucking on this the entire time we're talking. Now listen, it's no secret that a lot of these fast food companies, especially these chains, Applebee's, come on, they're trying to kill people. You know it. We can all agree on that, right? I mean, their food is made really middle America, designed to make you fat, designed to, you know, just fill you up. It's made with crap. You know, it's all none of it's really handmade. It's all kind of processed stuff. Well, this comedy group called the Upright Citizens Brigade made this fake ad for their cheese on queso on fromage menu. It's an all-cheese menu. It includes an ice cream and cream cheese sundae and a new cheeseburger, 1/64 of a pound of beef, 32 American cheese slices, served with a side of Cheetos, smothered in nacho cheese. Freaking delicious.
Cheese never tasted so good. Come to Applebee's for our new cheese on queso on fromage menu. We heard your comments, and we know that you want cheese, like our gooey quesarama bites, our mozzarella sticks served with a trio of dipping sauces and smothered in nacho cheese. Does that look like guacamole? Well, it's not. It's just cheese dyed in green. How about a refreshing cheeserita? Your choice of Alpine Swiss, Wisconsin cheddar, or Danish blue flavor, garnished with a refreshing cheese cube. You'll be the big cheese when you pair it with our cheeseburger, 1/64 of a pound of beef and 32 American cheese slices, served with a side of Cheetos and smothered in nacho cheese. Who wants ice cream when you can have cream cheese? Finish it all off with our hot cheese sundae, topped with Cheez-It cracker bits, and our whipped Cheese Whiz topping, smothered in nacho cheese. Come see what's covered in queso at Applebee's.
I love the disclaimer at the end of that video. It says, not responsible for heart failure or explosive diarrhea due to lactose intolerance. Dude, what was that? Sounds like a bird call. Here, Dickie Bird. That's what cracks me up, too. Ever ask someone how they're doing? They'll say, man, I got some kind of a bug or something. Spent the whole night on the bowl. I mean, I said, maybe it was something you ate. He goes, nah, just had the double cheeseburger and crisp-cut fries at Applebee's. Eat that all the time. Can't be that. Go, yeah, you're right. Well, though, with all those fresh ingredients, non-processed cheeses they use, it's a surefire bet. The meal at Applebee's had nothing to do with it. Must be a bug. That's it. No one else has it. Oh, man. Hey, remember that story I brought up at the end of the year last year about Chipotle getting busted for hiring people who didn't have proper papers? Well, the Wall Street Journal ran this story that, it kind of makes me think that something's up. A government crackdown that found Chipotle Mexican Grill had hired hundreds of illegal workers has turned Monty Moran, the burrito chain's fiery co-leader, into an unlikely champion of immigration overhaul. Over the past year, Chipotle became the highest profile target of an Obama administration campaign against employers of illegal workers. In a so-called silent raid, Immigration and Customs Enforcement inspected the chain's hiring records and found more than 500 undocumented workers who had to leave the Denver-based company and go elsewhere. It had to let go more than half of its 900 employees in Minnesota and lost others to federal scrutiny of outlets. Now, this guy is basically becoming an advocate for changing immigration laws. He wants to change things. In recent months, he met with senators from several states, and his message was clear: fix immigration. He said, these guys need to know what's going on. Immigration is really messed up. No shit, Sherlock. Because companies like yours hire them. Now, he's not prescribing a remedy, right? He just told lawmakers he needs access to a strong legal workforce. He's got maybe a temporary guest worker program, might work in sectors like agriculture, but it doesn't address the needs for qualified labor on a year-round basis. And he's right. He said by the end of the year, Chipotle expects to have added roughly 145 new outlets, with up to 165 added this year. The chain views immigrants as critical to its success, and he's not alone there. About half of his 30,000 employees are Latinos. Many of them are store managers or in leadership positions. Now, the problem is this. Kids don't work anymore. And either their parents don't want them to work, or the kids just don't want to go get a job. That's why we have an illegal immigration issue. I'm in my mid-40s. When I was growing up, you worked wherever you got. You could find a job, you worked. My mother, when I turned 17, told me that I had to start paying room and board. It wasn't a lot. But she goes, it's very important for you to know that later in life, you're going to have to pay rent and you're going to have to pay for your own food. Now, listen, it was like $5. It was stupid. It was something dumb. She probably, ended up giving me the money back. But it was a principle. So I had to get a job. And I had already been working, I'd been working, doing all these other stuff, and I finally got a job. I mean, but, now that doesn't happen. I mean, back then, we worked at Burger King. We worked wherever we could find a job. And now if you go to Burger King or if you go to McDonald's or any of these places, you see Mexican-Americans working there, except for In-N-Out or places like In-N-Out. All American kids working in In-N-Out. It's a hot job to have because they start you well over minimum wage. As a teenager, I was mowing lawns. I cleaned chicken shit out of coops. I painted houses. I worked on farms. I sold Grit magazine in front of Walmart before I finally landed my real job, my first real job. I was washing dishes at a cheap Mexican restaurant. I was 15 years old. It was just 2 months shy of my 16th birthday, but got the job anyway. That's a story in and of itself right there. This restaurant was a front for Mexican mafioso who owned it in Springdale, Arkansas. That's a whole other story, though, man. They were running drugs and prostitution ring out of this place. I got quite an education working there, and it wasn't just about food. Several times, man, I thought I was going to be killed. The owner liked me. He was really protective of us. I could talk about this stuff for hours, but, man, I'll tell you this. I'm going to tell you one thing. One day, I thought this guy was going to clip me. I accidentally let it slip in front of his wife, who was also working there, that he and his girlfriend had come by at the restaurant earlier in the day. What I didn't know is that she knew he had a girlfriend. I didn't know this. So I'm thinking, oh no, he's gonna kill me. It gets a little weirder than that. He asked me to take pictures of them together at his home. He says, he pays me $20 up front to buy film. Said, be at his house 12 noon sharp on Saturday. Now I'm thinking I'm going to get shot. I'm not going to see it coming. I'm just going to drive down there. If I was 1 minute late, he was going to make me pay for it. I drove to his house without telling my mom, because if my mom knew, she wouldn't let me go. And we'd be calling family in New York, you know? Anyway, I showed up early, and I expected to be shot in the head, but it turned out he really did want me to shoot pictures of him with his girlfriend, who I have to say, dressed like a Mexican street hooker. I mean, oof, she was nasty. I bet he did nasty shit with that chick. Oof. Anyway, pictures turned out great. And that's the other thing. Back then, you had to rely on your metering, you know? So if anything was off, you wouldn't know until you got the pictures back. So you really had to have your shit together with a camera. I mean, you couldn't look and see what it looked like. I loved doing that back then, but now I'm sick of it. Anyway, this is much longer, much later than that. I told my mom about it, and she made me quit. I never went back. I ended up landing a job at Burger King during my senior year of high school. That was the most fun I've ever had. I smelled like shit every night. I got off when the shift was over. I smelled like grease, but I ate well. Great chance to meet girls too. Too bad I looked like a big gay Big Bird. That stupid fucking hat they made you wear back then looked dumb, and he stunk. So you met a lot of girls, but you didn't really do anything with them. Okay, hey, let's do some cooking. Actually, we'll talk about doing some cooking. I've got the book here in front of me. I'm just going to read a little bit. The first thing you want to do, and I'm going to put the recipes on the site. I'm going to write them out so you can check them out. You can look at the pictures too. First thing you need to do to make this cold pig ear salad is make a quart bouillon. Now, this bouillon is very easy to make. It's really useful for cooking everything from, you know, delicate things like brains to pig's feet, anything gelatinous, like the pig ears, kind of gelatinous. You simmer the bouillon for 20 minutes. Then add the, you know, odd bits, infuse the flavors into the water. The pre-cooking is important when you're poaching brains and sweetbreads, but when cooking things like pig's feet or ears, you don't really need to simmer it first. You just need to, you know, put it in, turn the heat on. Now, what you'll need to do this, 5 cups of water in a big pot, 5 cups of water, 1 carrot that you've peeled and sliced, a shallot that you've sliced, stalk of celery, some lemon zest, 2 tablespoons of freshly squeezed lemon juice, 2 star anise, 1 stick of cinnamon, 1 large sprig of thyme, 1 fresh bay leaf, 10 black peppercorns, 4 cloves, and some sea salt, if you want to add it. You don't have to, but you can. I added it. Put that all together, simmer it for about 20 minutes, turn the heat off, strain it. That's your bouillon. You can save it, use it whenever, just when you're ready to cook with it, just preheat it. And for doing these pig ears, it's kind of one of those things where you want to make it ahead of time. And then get it up to temperature and throw the pig ears there. Now, when you're choosing pig ears, it's kind of an important thing here if you're going to do something like this. Sometimes they come separately or with the head. Now, if they come with the head, chances are you're going to have to clean them. You're going to have to shave the hairs off of them. But if you have a good butcher, have him take them off. And I go to the Asian store, I buy them, and they've already been taken off the head. They've been cleaned. There's no earwax and shit in there. And that's the other thing. Don't get grossed out. If you're going to get grossed out by this stuff, don't do it. Seriously, you know, it's not worth it for you. But, you know, like when, listen, when Ryan was doing this nose to tail at home, this guy was taking a whole, this guy was barbaric, took a whole pig's head, chopped the ears off, was cleaning out earwax, you know, it was nasty, was shaving the damn thing with a razor blade, just to make sure there's no hairs on it. But if you've got a good butcher, they're going to take care of all this for you. And it's worth it, too, because you might pay an extra 20 cents a pound, but all that extra work, it's not going to gross you out. Fresh ear should be lightly pink in color, should feel kind of moist. They'll vary in size with the age of the pig. Now, if you've got a fairly mature pig, you're going to have huge ears. I think the ears I got were about, I don't know, 5-6 inches long. So I thought it was a pretty good-sized pig. So if you do get them, you got some hairs on them, you can either cinch them or shave them off, and then brine them for a couple of days. Just take the ears, put some coarse sea salt over the top of them, coat them with some saran wrap, stick them in the fridge, leave them there for a day or two, and then come back. You want to brine them. They've got to have some flavor in them. And then when you're ready to actually cook them, you've got the bouillon, right? Get the bouillon, get it to a simmer, add the pig ears, and then cook them for about an hour and a half to 2 hours. You basically want them to be simmered until they're tender, the skin starts to come away from the cartilage, and you can tell that they've been cooked all the way through. It's kind of like the pig's feet, you know? You know when the pig's feet are done? Because they basically just start to fall apart. And that's basically what the ears do. When you're done cooking these things, lay them out on a flat board, transfer them to a board, make a small cut at the base of the ear. And the reason why you want to do this is because you're going to lay them flat, and you want to make a little small cut there so they'll actually lay flat. If you don't, they're going to curl on you. So by making a little incision, you can actually spread it out. So you've got that cut there. You put it on a piece of parchment paper, and then put that into a pie plate. Cover that with a second piece of parchment paper, and then put a pie plate on top of that, and then put a weight on top, like, I don't know, a can of tomatoes or something heavy, just something that will flatten it out. Stick it in the refrigerator and leave that overnight. Now, what happens here is that it starts to cool. That cartilage and the actual fat starts to set. That gelatin will set flat. Now, you've got a whole pie plate on top with some weight. Sets it flat. Now, we're going to go back and we're going to trim these things about a quarter inch to a half an inch wide. You trim them nice and long. You can use my pictures that I've taken on the website there. You can use that as a guide. To actually make the salad, quarter cup of peeled and finely diced carrot. I'm going to explain exactly how to do this in a second. Another quarter cup of finely diced celery, and include some celery leaves. 2 tablespoons of finely sliced shallot. 1 tablespoon of small capers that you've rinsed. 1 tablespoon of red wine vinegar. 1 tablespoon of Dijon mustard. Some sea salt, freshly cracked black pepper. And about a quarter cup of extra virgin olive oil. Now, with the vegetables, the carrot and the celery, you want to dice them into what's called a brenois. Now, brenois is an evenly shaped dice. So if it's a quarter inch thick, it's a quarter inch wide. It's a quarter inch cube, or an eighth of an inch. If you really want to get fancy, get to an eighth of an inch. Quarter inch will do it, though. It's small enough, just little bites. This is not like a salad, like a leafy salad, although the celery leaves are going to kind of add that, you know, lettuce-y look to it. But basically, this is all about crunch and texture and flavor. To make the salad dressing, it's basically 1 tablespoon of the red wine vinegar, add 1 tablespoon of Dijon mustard, a quarter cup of extra virgin olive oil that you drizzle in at a very low rate, and mix it, you know, kind of blend it until you get a nice emulsification, and then season it with sea salt and cracked black pepper. Place the ear in the salad bowl, put the carrot, celery, shallot, capers, put all that together, whisk in the vinegar and mustard, season well with the salt and pepper. Whisk in the oil, pour it over the salad, toss well, and serve this at room temperature. That is basically a cold pig ear salad. That'll serve 3 to 4, depending on how big the pig ear is. If you want to do more than one pig ear, you can. I did 2. And again, a recipe like this is about flavor, yes, but it's also about texture. And pig ear doesn't have a whole lot of meat in it. And basically all it is cartilage and gelatin. So it's more of a crunchy thing. The flavor is coming from the celery and the carrot. And also, you know, the vinaigrette that's on there. But you're going to get a little porky flavor in this. But that court bouillon flavors the pig ear really well. And it's almost Vietnamese. It almost smells like pho when you're making that court bouillon with the cloves and the star anise. So it's very nice. There's a little cinnamon in there. And you can really smell that. And that comes right through. If you want to know more about this book, Odd Bits, How to Cook the Rest of the Animal by Jennifer McLagan, I'm going to put a link on the website. You can buy it from Amazon.com. We're going to be cooking from this book a few times this year. So get ready. We're going to do a lot of this. Not a lot, but we're going to do enough of it to actually wet your whistle. And again, if you don't want to cook like this, if you don't want to eat this stuff, that's okay. Just bypass it. It's not a big deal. But I'm showing you. You heard me, you know, kind of explain this. There's not a lot to it. It's just very easy. I put pictures on the website. You can see what it looks like. The flavor is amazing. You know, don't get weirded out by the earwax and shit. Man the fuck up. Do the deed, you know? Believe me, it's a humbling experience getting this involved with pig parts of an animal that you've never eaten before. You get a little clarity from it.
Authorities say he ordered a beer, drank some, went to rob a bank, then returned to finish drinking his beer.
Florida police arrested 52-year-old John Robin Whittle, who stands accused of, well, not wanting to waste a beer.
It's a shame to waste a good beer, and that's the way a Florida man thought. He didn't let anything get in the way of him finishing his cold beer, including robbing a bank. He thought he had an alibi. I was in the bar drinking a beer.
Yeah, I just left for a minute. I did rob the bank, but it was only for a minute.
Did you hear about that ad? McDonald's in Germany ran this ad. Burger King got really pissed off. The ad shows this little boy having his McDonald's lunch stolen by bullies every day. Eventually, he wisens up, hides the lunch in a Burger King bag, and now nobody wants his lunch. It's really funny if you think about it. It was actually, you know, when you're breaking balls, it's pretty good. I mean, that's a good one. Ad Age gets a hold of this story. Burger King issues a statement saying, McDonald's has broken the rules of comparative advertising by degrading the Burger King brand. And then McDonald's agrees to pull the ad. I mean, no, everyone has lost their sense of humor all of a sudden. You guys are duking it out. Duke it out. What's wrong with you? Pussy. And The Atlantic ran an eye-opening piece last week, actually a couple weeks ago. Man, this FDA inspection problem is really getting bad. There's one reason why our food supply isn't safe. It has nothing to do with the personnel. The FDA does not have enough people working there to actually do its own inspections. So they delegate them to state agencies. In 2009, they had this salmonella outbreak from peanuts. And the state system is way too diffused to work. This peanut processing plant was responsible for the salmonella outbreak that was inspected multiple times by a state agency working on behalf of the FDA. So the FDA never saw it. They outsourced it. And it resulted in one of the largest food recalls in U.S. history, led to serious questions about the effectiveness of state food facility inspections. The overall number of facilities inspected by the FDA themselves decreased to just under 17,000 facilities in 2004, and now at 15,900 in 2009. It's going to states now to fill the gap. In 2009, it contracted with 41 states to conduct inspections, and these conducted 59% of all the inspections by the FDA. And the real root of the problem is money. The FDA gets its funding from Congressional Agriculture Appropriations Committees, not health committees. And according to them, they're lucky to get the $50 million increase in funding that they did get. And apparently this isn't enough to hire and train people to do the job. It's not that the states can't do a good job. It's just that the dispersion of authority leaves a lot of room for flexibility in interpretation, you know, and who's accountable. It really is a crapshoot, no pun intended. You just don't know if what you're putting in your mouth is going to put you at risk. So, you know, the ratio is low, of course, so there's a small chance you're going to get sick, but there's always that small chance. And these recalls scare the crap out of me because it's a constant reminder that there's always going to be that possibility, however small, that this apple you're eating that you think is going to be healthy for you might be tainted in some way. I'm not going to live in fear over this stuff, neither should you. Like I said last year, look, how many of you have either gotten food poisoning from eating fresh produce or knew someone who did? I'll continue to take my chances. It just, you know, it's one of those things that happens. It's part of life. We've just got to get used to it. And we can't continue to, you know, point our finger at these agencies. They're getting funding. They just don't have enough people to do the job. And that's that. And that is my life as a foodie. Thanks for joining me today. I'd like to thank Bravo for the audio intro. I'd like to thank CNN and Eater for more audio. And I'd like to tell you that we're back, and we're going to be doing more stuff. We've got the Tasty Awards this week, so I'm looking forward to that and catching up with everybody. Until next time, my name is Phil. This has been My Life as a Foodie.